Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Gentlemen, it's time to go broke or go home.
Well, I think we've already done one of those.
Yeah, I was about to say, might have to do the other one, too. As a matter of fact, right now in the chat, one of our fans asked, when are we moving to the new studio? Good news. Last night, I was there until about 11:30, putting in sound baffling, and we were able to tame this amazing big old studio. In fact, we have a, for the video watchers, we have a whole bunch of photos that I took. We did an impromptu AMA yesterday, and I went around.
This is on the Modern Road Patreon.
Yeah, we grabbed a bunch of photos of how stuff is coming along at the new place. It's really happening.
It looks great. I'm expecting a card table with a microphone and a dingy warehouse from Saw.
Yeah.
And we're not that anymore. Yeah, so we put up, like, I think it was like 20 pieces of baffling across the walls, and you can even see on the ceiling here. That was the one I was most surprised by.
What a difference it makes to do that. The aesthetics are, you know, we try to keep it simple. They're kind of zigzagged all around. We're also making a Modern Rogue episode out of that where we're doing kind of a before after. Mm-hmm. Like, we, in order to get the maximum beforeness of it, we had to move everything out of that whole studio, and it is unusable. It is horrific. You would clap and it'd be like 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, 4 Mississippi,
and you'd be whispering Mississippi, and that would make it even go longer.
but then the after, by last night, you know, on top of all the sound baffling and then laying down the carpets, it was astonishing. I would say, like, now you clap and then, you know, whatever echo there is gone in under a second.
Yeah, it's enough that, especially once there will be more objects in there. So, like, you can kind of see if you're watching the video that they're a little higher up on the wall. And that's partially because this room is taller than, say, a normal room would be.
Yeah.
It's more effective for those baffles to be higher up because we'll have stuff closer to the ground. Like, when before we did all this, we had a bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it was all on the ground and in the corners. And even though it was against the wall, it didn't help with the corner in the upper part of that room. So these are going to be very efficient for the unused space. Well, once people are in there and there are objects and things also helping.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, throughout the rest of the place, you know, we've finally got a lot of operational things done for the new HQ, stuff like, you know, the septic system and functioning showers. And we got another surprise when it came to the shower side. The plumbers rightfully expected that everything was tied into one system, and it turned out it wasn't. It turns out that the previous tenant had been having all the poops go into one bucket, basically. Wait, and then he would spray it everywhere.
Because this has been chronicled in Night Attack. I knew that the septic system was just a hole in the ground going to a pipe in the ground. So the shower was also a different pipe in the ground going to another hole. Jesus.
Two independent, non-compliant, crazy person septic things.
Almighty.
But so the big question that we were discussing right before the show started is, we're getting to that point where so you begin with an idea, and obviously, you know, this whole show is about trying to be an independent creative. So you begin with a hypothesis, a theory, a suspicion. And in my case, it's every time I've ever done a collaboration, the results have been tremendous. Why don't everybody do collaborations? Answer, because it's very expensive to do so. Why is it expensive? So then you ask the question behind the question. The reason it's expensive is because, not so much for the flights. The flights are substantial investment, but it's the hotel, and it's also the perception that it's like, okay, you're going to have to stop all the things that you do at your place and then press them on pause swoop on out here, let's shoot as much as we can, and then you run back home and we get back to work. Like, what if we broke that narrative? What if we made it so that you come out for as long as you feel like coming out, and you're able to bring your significant other, and there's essentially no cost for the whole time that you're out there? What if we built a shared production, an artist collective, a Bauhaus of podcasting, basically? Then all of a sudden you get an efficiency of scale. And so far, even though we've got a long way to go, mm-hmm. it seems to already be paying off. We've done more collaborations in the last like 3 weeks than we had in the previous year. And these are top tier talents at the top of their game who are bringing content to our channels. And
I got a phrase for you.
Okay, go for it.
Maybe you've thought of this. Maybe you've used this. If not, it's genius. If you did, it's still genius.
Okay.
Skywalker Ranch of podcasting.
Yes, that's exactly. That's exactly what we want to do. Or the only bummer is that podcasting is perceived as something slightly different than YouTubing. And I don't know. I don't know how.
The Skywalker Ranch is streaming. Whatever.
What about just Creator Ranch?
Yeah, but I'm saying, the idea is to explain it to people who know what Skywalker Ranch is. You go, oh, I get it.
Yeah, right. Well, and so here's the question that we're starting to have to wrestle with is we've got a lot of the fundamentals finished, and we just passed like a county inspection, which is good. Everything seems to be lined up, but. Damned if we're broke. Like now we're at the place where it's like, okay, we either need to press pause on everything and step back and just, you know, 6 months from now, you know, hopefully make enough money doing what we're doing now to be able to do the last 20%, 10%, however much, or we need to make a big ask. And so the challenge that we're wrestling with right now is how do we tell our story in a way that the simplest version of all of this is go to the people who already love you, the core of your gravitational well, mm-hmm. and just say, hey, guys, need more money. And then however many people are all the way invested will give more money. But I suspect there's a way to do it in a clever enough way that you attract more people into that gravitational well, where people invest and say, you know what, I've been watching this stuff for 10 years, and what you're up to looks just crazy enough that I love it, and I want to be a part of it. I want to be a founders club member of whatever this thing is. But then you run into all of the storytelling stuff that you have to figure out, like, well, what is the thing called, and what is it that we're doing, and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so those are the issues that are sort of rattling around in my brain right about now.
You know, it's interesting is looking at when Disney does that, and Disney's done everything from like paving stones, like they have they built a whole walkway where people bought those stones, the bricks to do that.
When they did that, did they make a specific promise that your name would be there forever, or was that just sort of
asterisk whatever Disney contract ... says can do? You know,
well, because like the poorly implemented side of that same impulse, like, I will do anything to avoid the embarrassment of what Leo Laporta had to go through at Twit, which was selling bricks on a property he didn't own, and then having to explain to everybody why they're still great now that he's moved to a strip mall or whatever his current situation is, right? So it's like, that horrifies me, and that makes me very reluctant to make that move.
I think that, yes, I think if you qualify beforehand and like, as long as we own the property, this will be here, give or take 3 months. I think you just put that caveat there. Like, I don't think people buy the bricks not because, man, I want this brick here to be forever like the pyramids. You do the thing because I like what you're doing. And if I can have my name be part of the thing you're doing, that's great. If that thing doesn't get exist there anymore, I'm more sad about that than my stupid brick, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I would not obsess over that. I would not worry over that because, you know, Brian, I bought this for the brick, not because of your dream.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing is you have to, from a storytelling perspective, figure out like what exactly is the story that people are buying into? Are they buying into the possibility of I don't know, being at the ground floor of the next Disneyland, or are they buying into I just want you to make more stuff or bigger stuff or louder stuff or
I'm wearing a Boring Company hat because a billionaire guy worth $20 billion on Twitter said, I have a crazy idea. I want to fund it. Buy an overpriced hat and help me fund the thing. I'm like, okay, I will support your dream, Mr. Billionaire, who, you know, one puff of smoke on Joe Rogan probably cost me $100,000. That's fine. Not bitter. You know, I have a friggin' flamethrower, a weed burner. I have a weed burner in a, you know, an airsoft rifle that's called the not a flamethrower because I have a dream. I'm like, yeah, I like your idea, Moneybags Musk. I'll still do that. Not bitter about, you know, your tweets that affect my portfolio. It's fine. Still love the dream.
I think you bring up a really good point because the
I'm invested in one place way too much. Yes.
No. My point is like I think you bring up a really good point, which is like the story matters, man. Story matters so much, and it's like, are you along for the ride? Do you think this is a cool idea? You care about that much, much more than it's like, what am I throwing my money at a billionaire?
Yeah, the person matters. The person matters. You know, like, you know, Musk is, I get so much enjoyment out of the things he's doing and what he's doing. And the corollary for you is your content you create. People get so much enjoyment out of this. And if I know contributing or helping you in some small manner means the fun continues, then yeah, make up whatever dumb excuse you want me to do, and you know, I will, you know, I, you know, charter member of the, you know, Brushwood Ranch Society, you know, what does it get you? Charter membership in the Brushwood Ranch Society, you know. Oh, and tripods and stuff to hold our cameras. Done.
Well, and that's one of those moments when you realize, like, oh my God, story really, really matters. Story, like you have to have a narrative that goes to this.
I'm gonna interrupt you because, like, I know what you mean by story, but story can also mean narrative in the fictional sort. The reality is you are doing a thing.
Right.
And that Musk doesn't craft a narrative. He's like, I've got a hat. Buy the hat, support the company. Mm-hmm. We make podcasts. Buy this thing, support us doing this. You know, yeah. The item is,
if you keep it simple, people understand it and they know this transaction.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, he's not weaving, you know, a history of the hat or the Boring Company. This hat means that you'll get a free ride in the Boring Company tunnel. There's no promises. There's no promise implicit in that at all. It's like, hey, if we sell 1,000, if we sell 20,000 hats, we'll have enough money to hire people to do this. And you're like, oh, that's the story I want to be part of. Like, I bought one of 20,000 hats to go help finance this.
It's a simple transaction, a tangible good for the people for a significant number of people will care about having a thing,
right?
Whether it's a hat, whether it's a rock, whether it's a shirt, whatever.
And then basically it's a standalone litmus test because there's no like, you're not pitching at that point. Like, everybody knows what's going on. You're just asking, hey, where are we at? Do you guys want to give me money for a hat and we keep on going or not?
Or not, yeah, even, I mean, not, that's even like a, I mean,
the hat is the symbol of what we did, but, you know, just quick aside. So the funny thing, I got the hat because that's cool. Like, I wear tons of SpaceX gear. I wear a Boring Company hat. And I tell you about, like, how I had, like, three people come up and recognize the hat in, like, the span of an hour. One was a person, Five Guys. Another person walked down and goes, oh, cool hat. And then this woman walks by and goes, oh, love the hat. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm walking along. And then I'm like, that was the general manager of Boring Company.
No way. For reals?
I didn't realize she wore, like, something familiar about her. Like, oh, she's the one. She's the one, like, runs, you know, Boring Company for Elon Musk. It was just too good.
Oh, that's
to say
amazing.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So, but that was the kind of the cool thing. And that's the cool thing about, like, when you do your scam stuff and that gear and all that, too, though, is the symbol is the idea of, like, yeah, you know, founders hats, things like that. Or you don't even need to, has, you know, you guys are much more smarter at figuring out what the things need to be than I am. But just it is what it is. It's mm-hmm. to make this thing you like, to bring more of the thing you like.
And I think it does. I think there's been an interesting hearing both you and Brian and Andrew talking about this. it's been interesting the past few minutes in terms of like, you know, buy the thing, support the hat, or buy the hat, support our thing. But then Brian saying, buy the hat, support the thing, or we'll stop. And I think there doesn't even need to be like this ultimatum. Because if you make it an ultimatum, then suddenly there's peril.
Right.
If you project that we're in peril, I bet it's like the Kickstarter thing, right? People are more likely to put money into a Kickstarter if they know that it's funded.
Right.
And if you say, if we don't get enough money, the boogeyman.
Yeah, it sounds like some flim flam kind of. And you're not. I mean, I understand, like, it, right. You're heavily investment there, but you'll be podcasting in a van down by the river. I know this right. about
you. Well, and that's one of the things. It's like what's in peril is not the project, not the development or whatever. Yeah. What's in peril is the schedule. You know, it's like, it might take a few more months than we thought. But also, oh my God, it's been 16 months. I'm really excited to move into the goddamn place. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
We're already on board, you know, like
we spent the past 16 months.
Patreons I support. I never watched them. I never pay attention to the content. I still support them because I want to know they exist in the world. I gave an Oculus Quest to an artist friend, you know, with no real strings attached, just because like, I like their art. I want to see what they do with this. This will be cool. Like if we could work on something together, that's great. But man, this person does really cool stuff and it'll be neat to see what they put out there in the world. That was my real goal.
Right.
And that's with your fans. It's like, I guess we have people support us.
My perception is that you only get to press that button so many times. And right. I fear that, like, it's a scary moment to be like, well, this is my one time to press the button.
So you get to press it when I worked in the nonprofit world, which is terrifying. You're doing this all. You're doing these asks all the time. So you have to draw a box around what the real thing is. Every time you do a project, it goes towards its help. Part of it's towards operational funding to keep the lights on. But you do have things you need to do. So you can draw a box around and say, hey, we need to build. We're working in the podcast stage facility. We need to do. We're doing a fundraiser for this thing. It'll be something unique. Rate this. We're selling these things to pay for the podcast studio section, you know. Next year it's going to be like, hey, listen, you know, we want nicer quarters for people to live in or the grounds. We're going to build a little park. We're going to do all this sort of stuff. We're doing this. We're building park thing to do this. That's the way Disney does it, is that it's like, we're building this new thing. And part of it is it's just this phases. So you can describe literally what the thing is that you're funding. Because right. when you want to do that ask next year, it's going to be different things. Draw a box around this. Like, yeah, last year we did this. This is what we did. This isn't this great. We're so excited by what we did last year. This year, we're going to do this. Yeah. Will you be there with us?
Keep it focused on the current project, the current, the next 12 months on what is going to come.
Right.
Because I think toilets. We need toilets here, you know?
Yeah.
And that was part of the toilet thing last year.
Yeah. Right? That was like, literally what we did was like, we need to poop, right?
And then we did. Now we mostly have toilets.
Mostly, except for that weird side jack. Hopefully, it'll be fixed in a few
days.
And
here in the comments, you get like, I already bought in, so I will continue to help any way I can. And that's it. And you want to make sure that each time it's this. What you don't want in the foundational world, like when we would go talk to, you know, Moneybags McGee and say, hey, we need money. Moneybags McGee did not want to fund the same thing every year. He didn't want us to come to him every year and say, help us pay for our rent. And it's like, is this going to be my deal? Every year I got to pay for rent. We would go, hey, we want to bring in such and such speaker to come in and speak. They've got a big fee. Can you do this?
And also, you can come and join us for the speaker because we're doing this thing or whatever.
They didn't care about. They just wanted to know it was going to something different. That was unimportant to them. Was just they wanted to know that we were doing this is a new project, and then you know we would then do a dinner with that speaker and raise other money. But there was ways you say, hey, we're going to do a program this year to go to this many schools in this underprivileged neighborhoods. We want to go to 30 schools. Will you underwrite that?
Because rent's not sexy. You always have to pay your rent. You always have to pay your bills.
And was there like a best practices to how often you would do campaigns?
You know, it depends upon you would with your regular donor base, you know, you could do, you know, once a year, you might do a regular sort of thing. And then if you had bigger things you're doing every couple years for much bigger infrastructure things, you could do that. You have different donors you might approach differently. If you have a bigger donor who, you know, every year their foundation's going to write a check for something, you want to come up with a reason every year to say, hey, give us a check, you know, give us one of these checks for this. I was able to go into schools and teach critical thinking because the Johnny Carson Foundation. right? And that was, they were happy to keep doing that every year, was like, this year, you know, we'll let Andrew go into schools, help him go do this. So for them, they were willing to do this, but they would do that for a couple of years. But after a period of time, then they want to go, they want to share the wealth with somebody else, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, okay, we'll go find some other backer. So it can be yearly, bigger things, you know, it comes down to if people look at it and go like, oh, I see the difference it's making.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that is, luckily, we were able to show some sincere differences from last year to this year. But man, it's just it's such a nerve-wracking experience to figure out like when do you get to ask and how often.
And you know, for as far as timing stuff goes, I mean, showing off how things will be different. I mean, in the near future, like this podcast studio and stuff will
drastically change.
Will make the migration over, and so that will be an immediate thing people will see across the shows that we make here. We've already started doing some Modern Rogue stuff in, you know, in the big steel building, but now that we have that studio space, there could also be stuff in there,
right?
Not to mention, you know, the kitchen set that we've shot some smaller things at is like totally different and fully built out now. So being able to see, you know, talking about seeing the change, that's, we're on the cusp of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The difference between this and scam stuff is I've got to weave a story about this color changing pocket knife or lighter. I've got to weave a story around this because you could buy similar ones in other places, but I've got to tell you why ours is different. Cause not just because of our presentation or pattern, but I'm going to weave a story around this physical thing because I'm competing with other companies trying to sell you magic stuff. Here, it's the shows, the thing you like. And like, I mean, I've got, like, I canceled one of my online subscriptions because it was one of these like network things. I was not watching any content on there. Mm-hmm. I let another one continue to run. Like, I probably won't watch anything on there this month, but man, I love that other show. Like Hulu was always on the verge. Then I watched, you know, they'd had, you know, What We Do in the Shadows. I'm like, oh, that was great. I would have missed that if I didn't know. That was worth my $8 or $12 or whatever I spent that month on it. I'll keep letting that thing run because if you keep bringing me stuff like that every few months, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the way I am with HBO. Like there'll be weeks at a stretch that I'm like not watching a damn thing on there. But I'm like, yeah, but then they're going to come back with another season of Last Week Tonight or whatever.
And like when Game of Thrones ended, I dropped HBO for a couple months because I didn't see anything good on the horizon.
Right.
And now that Gemstones is here and I'm getting into Succession, I'm thinking of picking it back up on my own. So it's like, you know, you have to demonstrate. You demonstrate it.
Speaking of which, should we move into picks?
Sure. Oh, wait, one side thing. So we were talking about the Disney bricks.
Oh, yeah.
I found this on the Disney blog. I think this is from March. So Disney's Walk Around the World was the name of the program. Because they are doing all this new construction and renovation, they will be tearing out these bricks in August 2019. You can go to the park and get, because they are not meant to be taken out, so you can't take yours home, but you can get a replica. But apparently the commitment was that they would be displayed until 2011. I don't know exactly. Some of these bricks.
So they did make some kind of specific promise.
Right.
Wow.
But that was 8 years ago. So, you know, this is probably not the first or the last example of making commitments on bricks and then realizing you need to move bricks sometimes.
I guess I need to do a little bit of research on various examples of this, because I know that there are people who deeply value when they go to the Wizard Academy and they go to the Fang and Feather Distillery, like they're so super stoked to see their name on the wall of
small
magnificence.
Wooden name tags all over the wall of this distillery.
And certainly that's a big part of what we're trying to put together here is this isn't just a vague cause that you're supporting. This is a physical place, a physical collective where hopefully art you enjoy happens, and that on top of all of that, it's also a physical place that you can visit and be a part of.
Yeah.
There is a value that, like, I'm just thinking like, man, like I've been a benefactor to one organization where like I bought a chair. I think I saw the chair once. I've been there multiple times with the move, and I bought like another thing, like they had a chalice or something grave thing. I've never seen it. I'm supposed to be there. It's supposed to be on a shelf. I don't care, you know, but there is that the first time you do that, like, I want to see it, but then you're like, no, I'm just doing this because I want to keep the lights on.
No,
you know?
That's a really good reminder, because I suddenly I'm thinking of how many Kickstarters I contributed to, and then after, you know, doing the $100 tier or whatever, I select don't send me anything. Like, I'm just glad to be here. Glad you're doing the thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what'd be funny would be like, technically challenging, but like, you could have an LCD display that's like, hey, today's electricity or this 15 minutes electricity paid for by so-and-so.
Oh, that's fun.
Reddit has that thing on with the Reddit gold or Reddit coins, however they work it now, where on the front page of the site, it's like, it's usually like this many people are supporting the website today. Let me see if I can see what that looks like. But I know that they have something like that where it's
oh, they have
sort
a running
of a
tally of people tally who are just sort of donating.
Yeah, I can't find it.
Anyway. See, so I already got somebody in there who says they'd be happy to help out with something like that. So, you know, that's a, I would say, brainstorm, JVanilla93, brainstorm on some ideas of what you think you could do that would be, that you could do to set up for them. You know, their bandwidth is very, very overwhelmed right now, what trying to do. But I think if you, you know, if you can come up with something cool or clever like that, it would be very, very, I'm sure you guys, I'm speaking for you, but I think you'd like to hear it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody can carry load, because right now their hands are full trying to move into this thing. But if, you know, I think clever things that don't require, you know, Brian and Bryce and everybody else to have to spend too much time trying to put together,
learning
get it done,
how to code,
are great ideas.
Yeah. Sorry, we were going to get into picks.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading this book. Part of the reason I'm so thoughtful on this is there's a book that came out last year called The Formula. And it's basically trying to scientifically distill the laws of success. And I'm only halfway through it. I got a ways to go, so I'm going to get everything wrong. And I almost certainly am going to go back and reread the entire thing again. Mm-hmm. But it's delightful. Because so much of it is putting words to these intuitions. And, you know, we're unpacking all of these here on the After Things podcast. But like the first rule is that performance drives success, which, well, that's obvious. You know, if you want to be the most successful tennis player, you should probably be better at tennis than everybody else. Mm-hmm. But then it gets into the question of like, well, what about the art world? There is no objective measure of performance in the art world. Art and art experiences are 100% subjective. So then what? And what they come up with is the second law, which is when something's unmeasurable, network effects determine success. And then before any of this, you have to define success, because success, is it measured in dollars? Is it measured in, you know, clout, whatever that means? And so they define success as the benefits of recognition from your community, whatever it is. So in the scientific field, success is number of citations from other scientists. For a pop star, it's going to be, you know, the largest sellout crowd, or how many awards they win and all that. So once you, I don't know, this whole scientific approach to something that has always been very ephemeral, I've really been enjoying. So I'm going to finish this and then read it again. But I do
feel skeptical of something that says the universal laws of success.
I mean, this is replace the word universal with the observed laws of success, because they back everything up with case studies and everything from, you know, generation of taste tribes and I don't know. Success is just such a mushy word that they seem to call their shot and stick to it. They define success, and everything that I'm hearing so far, I'm like, yeah, no, that seems to be how it goes.
Hmm. You know, and I think and I think qualifying what that means versus great, because that's the problem. Like, a successful in the art, we're like, I'm successful. Like, I'm by myself in my room and I'm having, that's great. We're going to talk about the miserable kind, which is great. And the fact that once they said, like, how do you measure success in the art world? I'm thinking in my head, well, like, you know, there it comes down to more like convincing other people. And as soon as you said network effect, I'm like, yes, this is, sounds like they put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah. And of course, you know, success to some people means, you know, the quiet satisfaction of a life well lived when you go to bed, you know, but instead they're all like, can't quantify it, not what we're doing. And so they're constantly trying to figure out, like, what could be quantified? And then they're finding specific things. For example, there are studies in music success. There was a study where they took nine groups of people and introduced them to a new music service that was invented just for this. They made sure all of the bands were independents that nobody but their family knew. And then they said, hey, everybody, go nuts, download and review however you like. And as a thank you for participating in this test, you will get to keep any of the downloads that you like the most, right? That was the control group. Everyone else, they split into different cohorts. They basically spawned eight alternate universes and just, and they added the detail of a leaderboard, of a billboard of what was the most popular or whatever, and publishing reviews and all that stuff. And all of a sudden you had eight alternate timelines where different early thought leaders gave different early opinions, and different leaderboard numbers drove people. There was one pocket universe where, you know, Coldplay was the biggest thing in the world, and another pocket universe where Coldplay was the worst rated out of all of them. And all of it seemed to follow this trend of early adopters and the network effects determining where stuff goes on from there. Then they said, okay, what happens if we alter this universe? So here's a pocket universe where Coldplay, or whatever the Coldplay equivalent is, they're currently at the bottom. What if we just lied and swapped all the numbers and told everyone that they're the most popular thing? And then sure enough, you'd watch it genuinely, per the downloads, climb up the ranks. And so, I don't know, it's really interesting stuff. I'm digging it.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, how incredibly contingent some things are is amazing, can be inspiring or frightening.
Oh, cool. I got a pick. So this is a video game pick. It's it's a little game. I've had two gatherings with people where we've played it, and it was immediately beloved. It's this new game called Heave Ho. It's really good on the Switch because you can just use the Switch controllers. But it's like a climbing game. So everyone is one of these little dudes with just two arms. And you use the joystick to move the arms, and you use the shoulders to grab. And so you have to work together to make it across these puzzles, make it across these levels, and make it to the end of the level. It's not a terribly new idea, right? There are other games like Mount Your Friends or I Am Bread that are the same sort of like grab and you know, aftertouch sort of thing. But I think what makes this different is that it's way simpler. You're only controlling two arms, and you're just using one joystick, and there's no stamina. It's a bit like, it's not 3D.
Quap, or if Angry Birds is at its heart just the joy of pulling a slingshot, this is at its heart just the joy of swinging on monkey bars. But in a virtual format,
basically. And because I think the thing with I Am Bread, or I guess Mount Your Friends is a little different, is like those are meant to be challenges, or meant to be challenging by yourself.
Right.
Where these kind of I can't quite tell, but it seems like the levels kind of stretch based on how many people are playing. So you can play it by yourself. There's like a solo version of the campaign, but it is a lot of fun with four people and everyone trying to get to the end.
A bit like maybe Space Team, where it's like the more complicated and chaotic it is, the more joyful it becomes when everybody cooperates together to make something happen.
Right. But the simplicity is the key here, because it's like Space Team's all about confusing people, right?
Right.
But here you learn how to play by doing the readying up. Like you grab a bar and then everybody just goes up into the game. So it's dead simple, and it's only like $10 or $15 or something on the Switch. It's a fantastic party game. If you're looking for a party game,
cool.
Heave Ho.
Sure, Bryce, if I ever go to a party. all I know is I saw that and I'm like, man, like my two anxieties, fear of falling and trying to work with a group, getting something done.
Sounds like dancing to me.
Just watching. My pick is the Righteous Gemstones.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How far in are you?
So, well, three episodes in.
Okay.
So
I've only seen the first two, if that helps to couch anything.
So here, let me explain my little bit conflicted. Danny McBride to me is kind of like Seth MacFarlane. I'm a huge fan of the person, not always the things they make, right? Because like a lot of Danny McBride characters for me, they're unlike, like I couldn't get into like Vice Principals because like I love Walter Goggins. I love Danny McBride, but I didn't find the characters likable and I was just like not invested in where they went. So Righteous Gemstones, at first I found it very unlikable, but then the bond by the end of episode two, the bond between him and the family, you start to like, and John Goodman's great. I got invested in the show now. I'm like, okay, there are awful people outside of, they are awful people, but there are other awful people around them. So I'm into this now because it's not just watching awful people be awful to nice people. It's being everybody's sort of awful, but these people at least have something to make them likable, which I liked. And then, yeah, I won't ruin anything. Do you know who comes into play in episode three?
I did watch the next week on, and Walton Goggins shows up at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Walton Goggins is on there. So, and great. He's great.
It looked like he was doing some kind of spin on Billy Graham or something.
Yeah, you'll see. I mean, okay. The universe got bigger and I'm like, this is great. Walton Goggins is, I don't want to call Walter, but he's great. He's just one of these people that everything he's usually in is just made better by his presence. So,
I think I'm picking up what you're sketching around, which is the narrative of the first two episodes are they're the biggest player in town. And it sounds like you're implying that the universe got bigger because now they have actual competition in somebody.
No. I mean, I'll watch it.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
No, I meant just as another character to be involved with and to see part of this sort of thing is that's what I liked is just the because you had the dynamics of the brothers and sister, you know, in there and this. And then it's like, OK, you know, the wife and the fiance are sort of a little bit outside there. But now you have another person we're going to be following who we'll see. I hope he's a regular because it's
that's great. Just. Walton Goggins is fantastic in just about everything I've seen him in.
Yeah. And it is what's great about that show is that, like, you know, that the way they portray kind of like Southern wealth, you know, like the house designs and stuff like this, the way it sort of works, you know, what does a ranch mean in, you know, South Carolina or whatever? It's a big piece of flat property with some trees,
yeah.
You know, a lot of grass, you know, and it just I love all of that. So
nice.
Great. Cool. And of course, What We Do in the Shadows. Oh, I finished it.
Ha! So good. Also, very much seconding your pick of the Righteous Gemstones. I've watched the first episode like almost three times now.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Well, because I have to, like, after I watched it, I had to bring it to my loved one and then had to bring it to my friends and then had to bring it to, you know.
Have you heard the word of the Righteous Gemstones?
Exactly.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this